The following presentation is a production of 92.5 XTU. The following presentation is a production of 92.5 XTU.
Thanks.
It's Raz on the radio, and on the telephone is Jim Ross, who's been in professional wrestling for 40 years. If you've ever watched a wrestling show, the voice you hear describing the action is this man on the telephone. He's got a book out right now that I want you to get called Under the Black Hat, His Life in the WWE and Beyond. Jim knows the intimate stories about all of your favorite superstars that are on the TV, and it's good to have you here, Jim. Good to talk to you today.
Good to you too, man. Hope you're feeling well.
I'm feeling okay. I'm wiping it down. I'm keeping it clean.
I hear you, brother. Me too. A different time for all of us to live in, and it seems like a strange time to I was telling somebody, I said, it seems like a strange time to be trying to promote my book.
Yeah.
Then somebody brought to my attention, yeah, but JR, they can order online. They ain't got to leave their home to get
That's
this
right.
book. And I thought, well, maybe there's a silver lining after all. So I appreciate you having me on. And
well, it's
the book's
great.
Book's doing great, by the way.
Good.
It's last week it was number one and number two on Amazon's pre-orders.
Oh,
the
that's
number
great.
One seller was the hardcover, and the number two seller was the audio book, which I think people would probably get a kick out of listening to.
Do you narrate that?
Yeah, I'm narrating it, and I narrated it in a non-professional reader's voice.
Nice.
I did it in my own voice. I added some voices. I added some different different tone, and it's a presentation, not a read.
Nice.
That's the audio book. So, you know, Amazon's got it. I got a nice deal on my website, jrsbbq.com, that you can get a hardcover book, personalized autograph, a collector's edition bookmark, believe it or not, and free shipping.
Nice.
in the lower 48, as we say. So
nice.
It's been daunting. It's been challenging, but it just seems like there's so much bigger problems to address. But I sure as hell like talking about my book and how I try to honor my late wife and things of that nature. It's a unique story, to say the least.
I really got into it. I read it in one night, which
wow
is a testament to your writing and your storytelling. But let's get into a couple little things here. How Oklahoma are you? If Kevin Durant is a zero, Blake Shelton is a five, and Joe Exotic is a 10, where do you fall?
I fall far from Joe Exotic, who reminds me of a old indie wrestler,
yeah,
independent wrestler who can't get booked.
There you go.
And he still thinks because he's got a mullet and bleached hair that he's marketable.
Yeah.
We try to say to people, look, folks, Joe Exotic is not a native Oklahoman. He picked on our spot to build his crazy-ass zoo.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Blake, the other guys you mentioned, Kevin Durant's not an Okie. Kevin Durant's D.C., played at Texas.
Yeah.
He was a Thunder player, obviously.
Yeah.
But the legit guy in that group was Blake Shelton. And an even more legit guy would probably be Toby Keith,
who
is the
Brooks.
Native Oklahoman and
yeah.
doing pretty good in the singing thing.
Yeah, Garth Brooks did all right, too.
Yeah, man, there you go.
You country music fan?
Well, you kind of grow up with it. It's kind of like being a football fan in Oklahoma. There's not a whole hell of a lot more for us to do.
Yeah.
We love our football and sports in general. And I live 3 miles where I'm sitting now. I'm 3 miles from the OU football stadium. So
nice.
I'm a friend of the program, and I love to support the teams. But, yeah, I'm a big sports fan. And all Oklahoma stuff. I enjoy all that stuff. They're my home team, man.
Even
like you guys and the Eagles.
You're a fan of State, too?
Well, I don't support them once a year. When they play Oklahoma in the Bedlam game,
there you go.
I can't go there. But other than that, hell yeah, man. I have buddies that hope Texas loses every game. And I said, you guys are stupid because we want them to win every game except ours.
Yes.
Let's really break their heart if we can by taking away an undefeated season. So, but I got buddies here that they whoever Texas plays is who they cheer for, who they gamble on. It's silly.
Right.
It's crazy stuff. But and like my buddy Lane Johnson. Old Lane healthy. He's backing on all pro level there for you guys.
Yeah.
And he's one of my favorite people I've ever met at OU football. Great guy.
He's a great Philadelphian and, you know, part of the Super Bowl team. So good stuff. So talk I did not read Slobber Knocker. So but I watched it on TV for all the years, and so I could hear you as not just a wrestling announcer, but you could have been the voice of OU. You're that good, or college football, or the NFL. How'd you get on Vince's radar that you were this play-by-play guy for wrestling entertainment?
Well, I had been in the wrestling business for 19 years before Vince hired me, so I really was an overnight sensation, so to speak.
Yeah.
When WCW went through some management changes, Eric Bischoff became the head honcho there, and at times did a phenomenal job. He decided that I was not the guy to be the voice. I was too Southern, which I always found to be ironic. He should have said, I'd rather start over.
Yeah.
Without trying to qualify, I'm too Southern. Because listen to this. How the hell can I be too Southern on a network, on a TV station that was built on Andy Griffith reruns, John Wayne movies, the Atlanta Braves baseball team, and a SEC football package?
Yeah.
That kind of denotes Southern to me. I might be wrong here. I may be very too defensive. So, but that's kind of the story there. When I decided to leave there, and I called Vince and got him on the phone, and we met, had about a 3-hour meeting in Augusta, Georgia, and shook hands on a deal. So best move I ever made, quite frankly. I've had some heartbreak. I've had some challenges. It's been a unique journey since 93.
In the book, you take it right up to the point where, especially the stories with the ass-kissing scene and a couple times where you had to take some pretty hard bumps, that challenged the very nature of your relationship with Vince. Like, every time I got to a point where you got to go in the ring, it seems like he takes you up to the point where you're about to quit, but you don't quit, which I love. And it takes a lot to get in the ring. And when I did some wrestling stuff over the years, you know, we did a radio show here for a while, and everybody always told me never get in the ring because the rules change. But you got in the ring, JR.
Yeah, I parallel it to being a cow on ice.
Yeah,
I was clumsy and awkward and untrained, and the mat and the hardness of that surface, because it bounces around. Trust me, just trust me on this one. Mm-hmm. It's hard as hell, and it's not fun. And the reason I didn't like doing it was because I didn't think I was good at it. So my massive ego was intervening, my intervention error.
Yeah.
But every time I did it, and this sounds very self-serving, so I apologize in advance, it spiked a rating.
Yeah.
So as long as anything in the entertainment world spikes a rating, you can bet your ass they're going to keep doing it.
Sure. Sure, especially, you know, taking a guy like yourself who – obviously, the listeners and the viewers loved you, and you were doing exactly what we wanted to do as fans, was to be in your shoes, to have, you know, Triple H beat on you, or, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin beat on you. But the one thing that I learned in talking to the guys here, years ago we did this radio show called Pile Driver, the rock and wrestling radio show. We used to go, it was on 60 stations across America. And the highest in the WWE chain we ever got to do an interview with was Shane McMahon. And He talked a lot about the same things that you're talking about here. It's always show business. And when I ran into guys like Larry Sharp over the years and King Kong Bundy, who's right from here, who was, of course, a big part of that first WrestleMania, they always talked about trusting each other in the ring. I know that you were an amateur, so to speak, in wrestling, but you trusted the guys.
Yeah, it was really good. My first experiences were with guys I could trust.
Yeah.
And, you know, kissing McMahon's ass just didn't take a lot of athleticism or danger.
Yeah.
what wouldn't do it today in today's environment of this virus crap? But
that's different.
And then the farther the booking went, I had that little issue in the ring with Michael Cole. Now, should Michael Cole trust me? Hell no.
Right.
Should I trust him? Absolutely not. So they say when you go out there, there's a piece that's on YouTube where I mount him because I'd seen it on USC, and I start punching him. And I was told before I went out, now, JR, make sure you got to lay this in. Just apologize later. So really no one cared if I protected Michael Cole or not, or vice versa. And, of course, consequently, I busted his lip.
Yeah.
I drove his tooth in my fist. which got infection. It was all kind of, it was a hell. It was a cluster. I'm telling you. So it progressively got worse, and I always felt like that. You know, there's a wrestler on this roster that probably could use this TV time that they're giving me, yeah, impersonating a wrestler. I just didn't think it was very logical. And again, you know, you can easily say, well, JR just wanted to do it. You know, I'd love to do that. I'd love to do it for a while, but then it got to be old hat, and it was the same story over and over.
Yeah.
Let's just humiliate JR. Look, it's show business. We're play fighting, but you still got to do your own stunts. And at my age and my lack of training, it really wasn't a wise decision.
You're listening to an exclusive presentation from Philly's Country Station, 92.5 XTU.
And they tell you that too, right? I mean, in the book you talk about, you know, Steve coming to you beforehand and Hunter coming to you beforehand saying, you're going to be okay in there? Like, they were kind of looking out for you. But once you got in their world, anything could happen.
Yeah. Well, Steve was Hunter, Triple H, Paul Levesque, Steve Austin, Undertaker, Kurt Angle. I did things for all those guys.
Yeah.
And they did take care of me. They did take care of me. Somebody showed me a clip on Twitter. But I'm on Twitter, at JRSBBQ, by the way, if anybody cares. Somebody sent me a clip of Undertaker punching me. And I think it might have been during that Mr. McMahon ass-kissing thing. I'm not real sure. But I didn't feel a thing. It looked like he tore my head off. He protected me.
Yeah.
He's a pro. He's a consummate pro.
Sure.
So I appreciated that. But again, then as the booking concept decreased in creativity, you got to be in a situation where you weren't as protected, and there's where the anxiety and the apprehension comes in. My late wife, God bless her, has never been more mad at me than she was after Triple H busted me open in the Madison Square Garden. Where Batista came in, intervened in a disqualification match, blah, blah, blah. And OJR got the win by being drugged over the arm over the carcass of Triple H thanks to Batista. She didn't know it was going to get that much blood. She didn't know it would get blood at all.
Yeah.
She was backstage watching. And that was the first time we drove home from the Garden. I don't know if you read about this.
Yeah, she was mad at you.
She was mad as hell. And yeah. She didn't say one word from New York City to Connecticut. Nothing. Not happy. Because she thought I was taken advantage of, and I was too gullible and too much of a team player. I didn't know any other way to be. Yeah. I don't know any other way to be now. I'm a team guy. That's how I was raised. That's how my dad always said, man, if you're going to take the man's money, you better do what he wants you to do. You know, it's so simple. But if your boss is paying you and you're accepting the pay, then you really kind of need to do what the job description is. And that's all I was trying to do.
You're in show business.
Show business, exactly.
So talk real quick about, and John Stossel sure met this the hard way when he talked about wrestling being fake. We know, and you know, and I know, because you hit that mat, you know what it's like to be in the top physical condition that the other guys are in. Talk about that for a second. I mean, these guys are real athletes, just like a pro football player, just like a baseball player, just like a hockey player. And just because they put entertainment to it, a lot of people sit back and go, he ain't hitting you. He's hitting you.
Exactly. Good point. Gravity doesn't know your season, veteran or not. And the fact that doing your own quote-unquote stunts is another challenging equation or facet to this situation. Where would I have learned to do that? I learned to be a broadcaster. That's what I work my skill set to be, is a storyteller, a narrator, whatever you want to say. But that other thing, you know, the popularity of the JR character at ringside, people had an emotional investment in me. And I always appreciate that, man. I mean, I really do. But it was bad casting, as we say. It'd be like making John Wayne a Nazi. I told Steve Austin that about his heel turn.
Yeah.
I ain't going to buy it. Nobody's going to buy it. And it's like John Wayne becoming a communist or something. It ain't going to work. People spit it back out at us. Yeah. But that's kind of the deal, man. It just, gravity doesn't know who you are.
Yeah.
And that mat is like, it's like sandpaper.
Sure.
It's coarse, and the ring is hard, and it's not the place to be for guys like you and me. And I can't speak for your athleticism, but I'm assuming you're not a trained wrestler either.
No.
So it scares the hell out of you that you're going to be doing something where you're throwing your body around, you're going down, and you're not ready for it. So that's kind of where I was in that deal. It's just look, the bottom line is this. The coach called a play. And I ran the play.
Right.
Simple as that. Whether did I like it? Not really. But I was being paid well to run the plays, and so that's exactly what I did. I did my job, and I wrote about it in this book.
Under the Black Hat is available now where you get your books in Amazon and all kinds of bookstores. Real quick, and I'll let you go, JR, the greatest moment in WWE history in your mind?
Oh, wow. Interesting. Boy, that covers a lot of territory, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I would say it was probably attached to a WrestleMania. And my inclination would be to speculate that WrestleMania 17, which was a record crowd of all events of any kind over the years in the Astrodome, was extraordinary because it was an outdoor or it's a stadium show, not outdoor, a stadium show for WrestleMania. We broke attendance records, all kinds of gate records, merchandise records, but having that card was loaded.
And that was Hulk Hogan's win, right?
No, that was 17. That was the next year.
Oh.
Hogan and Rock was 18.
Yeah.
And that was one of the most memorable matches I've ever called because we all believed that Rock would be the hero.
Sure.
And Hogan would be the villain. It didn't quite work out that way. Rock really wasn't a villain, but Hogan certainly was not a villain as well.
Yeah.
But the Astrodome was such this iconic structure from over the years because of being a dome, being so big, et cetera, et cetera. And going in there, I was going to say that this card was so deep that we had to find something for Undertaker and Triple H to do. So we booked them together.
Yeah, wow.
That's how deep that card was. Wow. And it was the second of the three-match trilogy with Rock and Austin.
Yep.
It was the time that Austin turned heel and joined forces with Mr. McMahon. And it was just it launched things. It just changed how the business was presented. So now WrestleMania, except for this year because of the virus, the last several years has been in stadiums. We set that in motion at WrestleMania 17. So I think that's a big turning point. But to say that Rock versus Austin at WrestleMania 18 in Toronto wasn't significant would be deadly wrong.
Yeah. Deadly so many wrong. Moments.
Big moment, man. Yeah. Big moment.
And we were friends with King Kong Bundy before he passed away here in town. He lived right over across the bridge here in New Jersey, and he always talked about his first moment at WrestleMania and how that put him on the map and how beautiful that first one was, too.
You know, King Kong Bundy came to work the Mid-South territory.
Yeah.
Ernie Ladd was the booker. He called him King Kong Tonnage. Tonnage. He was always on his ass about giving more effort. And he needed a quote-unquote gimmick. So big, powerful guy, you know, a monster heel type deal. So I gave Bill Watts the idea. I said, instead of him beating people with a three count, let's have him beat him with – he's so devastating and so dominating that he would beat people with a five count.
Wow.
So I gave Buddy the five count gimmick. And I saw him about 6 months or so before he passed away at an autograph thing, a fan convention deal, and
good man.
He was just still bitching about Watts' payoffs. Ernie Ladd was a pain in the ass.
Yeah,
but he loved me for the five count.
Well, good man, Mr. Bundy. We miss him around here, but I'll let you go. Thanks for talking. Under the Black Hat is in stores now, and of course on you can get that on Amazon. And you know, Jim gets into the story. There's so many. There's another book in you, Jim. You stop short at a couple spots in the book.
Good.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a couple things. I wish you would have went a little further with Chris Benoit because you know, that was a horrible situation as a wrestling fan and as a person who liked watching him in the ring.
Yeah,
love you to get into that and get into a couple more things about you know some of the back end of wrestling, not WWE, but like. You know, some of the health issues and stuff like that, because that's the key to a lot of things going on there. But
yeah,
I understand the probably limitations you got on that.
Yeah, but I love the confidence you have, and I love fact you're suggesting that, it's a cool deal. And I'm, of course, I've got another career starting with AEW.
Yeah, I've heard you on the promos.
Wednesday nights, you know, TNT. For now, I don't know what we're going to do going forward because of the virus.
Mm-hmm.
We provide programming for our 8 to 10 o'clock Eastern time slot. But this AEW is another adventure I'm on.
Yes.
And I'm enjoying the hell out of it. I'm very blessed, my man, that I had some bad hands dealt to me. And my life is always about this. It's always about how do you respond to the bad hand. There were times in my life where I thought that Ambien and Xanax and Crown Royal could solve all my issues with when these bad hands were dealt. I numbed myself while I was the EVP of WWE. Yeah. Nobody knew. I couldn't sleep. Then I found out I had sleep apnea, you know, for God's sakes, at the third bout of Bell's palsy. And then at 17, I lost my wife. So I've been knocked down enough times to know that I didn't like staying there. It's not a good view when you're knocked down. It's not a good view at all. So I got my ass back up.
Good.
And that's what I'm doing now. I'm enjoying my work with Tony Khan and AEW. And, you know, the last time we were in Philly, the only time we've been in Philly so far, we sold out the venue. So you will be back in that neighborhood sooner than later if all this stuff goes well.
Good.
But I'm living a good life, man. And I appreciate you taking your time during this time in our lives to talk about Under the Black Hat. I really do appreciate your time.
Well, I'm a fan. Love it. And, you know, I go way back to the Saturday morning TV shows, you know, when Andre the Giant was on Saturday morning. Love
yep.
all that stuff. So I appreciate it.
All right, brother.
All right. Under the Black Hat. Get a copy of it if you're a wrestling fan. Jim, thanks. Thanks for mentioning Philadelphia in the first paragraph. I was excited to see that.
Okay, great. Well, it's a great town, man.
Yes, it
they
is.
They love their wrestling in Philadelphia.
Check out more of our podcasts at 925XTU.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.